You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
With the Strait of Hormuz currently under an Iranian blockade, 20% of the world's daily oil traffic now sits immobilized behind a wall of sea mines. 2.5 weeks into the war, people across the globe are feeling the effects of the conflict in the form of spiking fuel prices. With petrol prices in New Zealand surging past $3 per litre, the government is considering its options. I spoke to Emeritus Professor and Energy Economics Expert Dr. Basil Sharp about the lessons we've learned or perhaps failed to learn from our response to the oil crisis of 1979 and what we could do now to improve our energy security in New Zealand. So this isn't the first time that political turmoil in Iran has led to a spike in petrol prices in New Zealand. Back in 1979, in response to the oil crisis triggered by the Islamic Revolution, the national government under Muldoon famously introduced carless days. What, if anything, did we learn from this experiment in reducing demand for petrol?
Well, we learned that the policy was a failure, basically. I remember it well because I was around at that time, and I remember the stickers that we had to put on our windscreens that prescribed the days that we could use our car or couldn't use our car, whatever the case may be. And basically, it was very, very unpopular. It was a nuisance for commuters, travellers. We didn't really have a big urban centres, didn't have well-developed urban transport systems. So it was very unpopular. And after, I can't remember exactly when, but it was probably a year or so, the government ditched it. It was touted as a failure at the time.
For those of us who are too young to remember this, could you just remind us how it worked? Am I right in thinking that individual car owners got to choose what day they weren't allowed to drive on?
That's my recollection. One would have to apply for the sticker, and you would place the sticker on your windscreen. And of course, if you were caught, and you know, policing this costs money, so you had to allocate resources to police it. But if you were caught, you were fined. But then, you know, people are quite innovative and they find ways around these things. Bogus stickers, driving at times of night when the compliance folk are not out there policing it and so on.
Recently, the government has suggested that in a worst-case scenario, we might see restrictions placed on the amount of fuel that an individual could buy each day or prioritising emergency services. So even if carless days were a botched attempt to reduce petrol consumption, in principle, is this kind of strategy sound?
I come back with the question, how are you going to decide who gets what? So maybe I'm a single person commuting to work. Am I going to get a smaller allowance than a family who has to drop kids off at school, both parents are working, and so on. So these regulations are really blunt instruments, and they just introduce a level of complexity into the system that in the end it just doesn't work. And also I might add black markets could arise. So, for example, if I get allocated so many litres of fuel and you get allocated less, we might be able to do a deal and we might be able to arbitrage, right? And so I can make some money out of my allocation from you. And so these are all sorts of complications and nuances that policymakers need to think very, very seriously about before using blunt instruments such as quantitative restrictions.
Going back to the late 70s and early 80s, under Muldoon's so-called Big Think strategy, New Zealand borrowed heavily from overseas in order to fund massive industrial projects designed to reduce our dependence on imported oil. These included the construction of power plants which harnessed New Zealand's own natural resources, as well as the electrification of large sections of the country's railway network. What were the successes and failures of this approach, and what would a 21st century version of Big Think look like?
Well, from what I can tell, all of the Think Big projects, bar one, and I can't remember exactly which one it was, it might have been the ammonia urea plant, but they did not yield a positive economic dividend to New Zealand. So they, from an investment point of view, they were a failure. Billions of dollars were borrowed to support these investments, and I imagine it was taxpayers in the end, over many years after Think Big, that it just continued paying off the debt. Today's Think Big, gosh, I guess the thing that comes to mind is the LNG plant that they're proposing. And I have yet to see an analysis that demonstrates clearly a positive net economic dividend to the economy. Lots of analyses have been done on their prices that have been estimated and so on, but from the point of view of a comprehensive cost-benefit analysis, I've yet to be convinced that this is a good decision going forward.
So you've said that renewable sources of energy provide greater security and that we need policy initiatives that focus on transition to electricity-based transport, heating, solar, wind, and geothermal development. Could you just talk a bit about what you would recommend if you had the government's ear right now?
Well, first off, I would consider policies that were revenue neutral. So, for example, the previous government's policy around EVs and larger fossil fuel-based forms of transport, to me, that seemed pretty innovative, and you got a response in terms of the uptake of EVs. And so, you know, policies like that can be creative, but we have to be really careful with these policies in terms of the incentives that are created and the implications for government debt. So I would be really, really careful about policies that produce financial incentives, and we need to think very carefully about how people react and uplift according to those policies. Now, in terms of electrification, this crisis, now remember, you can't predict these crises. They're black swan events. They just happen, like COVID, it just happens, right? And so we can't predict for them, but we can try and build resilient systems of energy supply. And New Zealand has got a marvellous opportunity. This is a strategic gift in a way. It's an irony in a way, but it's a strategic gift to a government to think about how we can foster the development of our renewable resources. And so politicians had this thing about saying, oh, well, you know, the lakes are low and the wind's not blowing, the sun's not shining, and we're going to have blackouts. We don't know what the economic cost of energy non-supply is in this country. So let's kick that one into touch. But what we can do is to foster the development of wind, solar. New Zealand's way behind European countries in terms of solar uplift. Solar and geothermal, massive potential there. There's biomass. So there's all these opportunities there that we can build a more resilient system that can supply electricity not only for heating and so on, but also for the electrification of transport. So if you couple that with some initiatives around trying to incentivize the uplift of EVs and so on, then we are better positioned in the future with a more resilient system to handle these shocks that come at us, and they will come at us in the future.
That was Emeritus Professor Basil Sharp from the University of Auckland.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.